Almost a year ago, October 7th of last year, as a matter of fact, on episode 64, we discussed the unsolved murder of Debbie Dorian. She was 22 years old when she was raped and murdered on August 22nd, 1996 in Fresno, California. Her best friend from childhood and into high school, Katina, had reached out to me last year in September and asked if we could cover her story, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Both of us at the time, when we talked, this was just months after the Golden State Killer, James Joseph DeAngelo, was taken into custody after his DNA was linked to a family member who had been uploaded and who had uploaded their DNA into a genetic ancestry site. And because Debbie's case had DNA, we said a year ago that this was a very, very solvable case because the DNA was there and the technology is here. And well, the technology has finally caught up with her killer. I literally just walked through the door when I sat down and got a message from Katina, if I've seen the article. And I almost knew right away what she was talking about, but I was like, tell me what article. And she's like, we got him. And I believed I followed that up with some expletives. And the emotions are really running high right now. And I had another episode that I needed to get out to you guys today, but I'm going to bump this ahead of that so I could give you all the good news and the update as to who this son of a bitch is. Some of you in the Facebook group are trolling his Facebook page right now, and I know it's looking really ugly. So if you want to go and check that out, all of his information, the article, his name and everything, we'll talk about it here, but it is on the Facebook group. We posted all about it. And joining me right now by phone is Katina. She just left work early. The news has been a complete shock, but she's here so that we can share this amazing news that this person is no longer a threat. Katina, you know, right now that the love is pouring in for you. Debbie's loved ones and her family, the people that cared about her from our Facebook group, from the admins of my group, they wanted me to send all of their love. And I'm so happy to be talking to you again today.
Well, thank you for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Sure. So we'll get to this person in a minute. Why don't you tell us what's been going on with you in the last year since this episode came out? You've been through a lot of life changes.
Yes, there have been a huge amount of life changes in my life. I moved away from Los Angeles. Well, let me backtrack a bit. I'll make it as brief as possible. In September of last year, after you and I had launched all of this, my mother fell and broke her hip, and it had been a downhill battle for her for almost a year, and in June, on the 25th, she passed away, and I decided that it was time for me to come back to Fresno, and I moved home, and while doing so, I also filed for a divorce, and I'm now living in my childhood home. And my sister and I are refurbishing and making it a nice little place for us.
Great. Well, not great that your mom's passed away. I'm sorry. Sorry about your divorce, too. I kind of had a feeling. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just a vibe that was kind of imminent, even at the time that we were talking. But was it maybe your mom's passing that kind of pushed you to pull the trigger on that?
Yeah, things just didn't work out. It had been a long time coming, and I don't want to talk poorly about him because, you know, he doesn't deserve that, but sometimes in a marriage, people just don't mesh well, and, you know, after being with him for a decade, we just decided to part ways, that it wasn't a healthy relationship for either of us.
Right.
So we're amicable, we're working together, and, yeah, we're fine as friends, but that's it.
Great. Good. It seems like you're doing okay. Like I see your Facebook posts and they're up and down, but you're definitely looking for that happiness in each, as each day passes. Like I feel like you're looking for the bright side of every day.
I do have my ups and downs. You're absolutely right. I miss my mother, of course, the girl always her mom. We were particularly close, which, you know, just made the blow a little bit difficult. But, you know, this news, it just heightens every emotion that you could possibly imagine in me. You know, I already miss Debbie like crazy. I've been missing her for 23 years, and I don't know what to do with this information, and I'm going to try my hardest not to break down and cry, because it's a roller coaster of emotions. The gentleman that I'm actually seeing somebody, the gentleman that I'm seeing is the one that texted me the article, the breaking news, and he goes, you need to sit down, and he goes, you need to watch the video, and so I thought you would like to know this. And you know, I immediately went to Facebook, and I tagged Heather in the post, and I tagged you in the post. You were the first two that I think of that I needed to tell this news to, because both of you, Heather had an emotional investment in Debbie, and you were instrumental in getting her voice to be heard, Debbie's voice to be heard. And I honestly believe that if you and I had not crossed paths when we did, Debbie's voice would not. It would not be out there right now.
Well, so, I had said earlier that it's my contention that her voice is alive because of you. And, you know, I know you're somewhat in touch with Debbie's mom, and I'm getting emotional, that she hasn't always had the strength to want to keep up with what's going on with the investigation. She hasn't had it in her, but you've been the one to be championing her case all these years and wanting her voice to be heard. And while her mom is maybe kind of shut down over the years.
I think that Sarah, I don't think she gave up hope. I just think that it was one of those situations where you just kind of throw your arms up in the air and you're like, well, you know, if something comes of it, then great. If not, then we'll keep trying. I actually did speak with her about a half an hour after I found out, and she had told me that she wanted to call me, but she couldn't because obviously it was still, you know, in the grips and close to the vest of police officers and Sarah and Peter. And so she was very happy that I had called her, and she is doing okay. She is, as she put it, a nervous ball of anxiety, and she's on a roller coaster as well, and said that the next few months are probably going to be a big roller coaster for everybody. So we're making plans to spend the weekend together after the new year, which I'm really happy about.
Great.
She's doing okay. And I tried to reach out to Peter, but he hasn't returned my call yet, so hopefully he'll get back to me tonight. I did see him at my mother's funeral, and he opened up a little bit about what he was feeling, and it was really good to talk to him, and I'll keep that close to me as well, because it was a very, very private conversation.
Right. After I posted a couple of things in the Facebook group about her case, having a suspect in custody now, some of the listeners commented that they went over to his Facebook page, and I saw comments, you know, there's people who are leaving some nasty comments directed towards him. And regarding, you know, finding out that he's actually this serial rapist and murderer. And some of those comments go back about 16 or 17 hours. So people were already finding out about this yesterday or late last night, whereas we just heard the breaking news this afternoon.
So I'm going to say that last night I was disconnected from all social media, and I turned off my phone, and I needed some me time. And you know, when I got to work this morning, the obviously my guy had sent the article to me, and then, like I said, I had no idea what to do with myself. I couldn't breathe. I was having a panic attack, and it was just hitting me. And then as soon as I watched the press release, the first thing that I thought of was this Netflix show called Unbelievable, and how, you know, I don't know if anybody's watched this, not on going to be a big spoiler alert.
I've watched it, and I guess if anybody hasn't watched it, maybe you need to shut this off because I think it was great. I saw the whole thing, but yeah, it'll be a spoiler alert, so go ahead. You've been warned.
So this you know, Debbie's case, along with the countless women that this monster sexually assaulted, it almost mirrors that show. And, you know, the two female cops in Unbelievable, I equate them to the two cops here in Fresno that will work tirelessly to Debbie's case, and how all these statewide agencies will work together to bring him into custody. And it just baffles my mind. I just finished binge watching that show a week ago. And, of course, the first thing in my mind was, why can't they leave all of this DNA to Debbie? Why can't it happen for Debbie? Why can't it, you know, this is everything that I've been thinking about when I hear about cases like this. Well, when is it going to be Debbie's turn? And when is her voice going to be heard in the courtroom? And so it looks like our moment has come, and I'm so happy that now she can finally rest.
Yeah.
Now. And her parents can get closure.
What have you read? I've only skimmed over the articles because I've been on social media posting about it and messaging you and my husband and my group admins about it and everything. And I'm telling everybody. And when I get a chance, I did watch the video, but what do you know about this man? Like, what other crimes has he been linked to? Like, how many? How far reaching is this?
I guess. Dyer had said in the video was that he had, and the district attorney, that he had misdemeanors for sexual offenses back in the 80s.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, now I cannot wrap my mind around how many other women who did not report the sexual assault that did, and that he harmed and he hurt, and if there are any other murder victims out there. And you know, it baffles my mind. And I don't know too much about him. Whatever is public. And I know that they're keeping information very, very limited. And that's fine. But I'm surprised that this guy has flown under the radar for 23 years. And maybe longer.
When you look at his pictures, he's kind of an average, unassuming, regular guy.
Oh, no. When I look at his pictures, I think way more than that.
I'm sure you do. But I mean, just the average person. I mean, looking at his Facebook, he's married. He's got children, it seems like. It seems he's kind of family oriented, you know? But
I feel bad for his wife and children. And I really hope that people are kind to them, because they're victims in this too, and they've been asked for this. And I really do feel bad for them. But for him, whatever comes his way, I have no pity. And I really hope that the universe dishes out the maximum amount of karma possible.
Yeah.
For what he did. And I mean, all those women. But now there are a lot more women in this state that are safe because behind bars.
Yeah. Debbie's his only known murder victim, correct?
From what I know, yeah. I believe he is his only murder victim.
Mm.
It's sickening. And she didn't deserve that, obviously. Nobody deserved that. But I really hope that he's going to be okay. I truly believe that. And I don't know how spiritual anybody is, but I truly believe that when a victim has been murdered and their crime is unsolved, that they wander around aimlessly and they don't know what's going on. And I hope that she finds peace and I hope that Sarah finds the peace that she so desperately has needed for 23 years, and that she finds closure and Peter for all the horrible things that he saw when Debbie was murdered and when he found her. I hope he gets peace of mind, because I can't imagine. I mean, I was just barely rebuilding a relationship with her, and if I'm feeling like the way that I'm feeling, I can't even fathom what they're feeling. I can't even imagine.
Right, and Peter's her dad and Sarah's her mom.
Yes.
And are they still alive, and are they still together?
No, unfortunately they are not together. Sarah did say something in reference to still being alive. When I spoke to her earlier, she had mentioned to me that she was very thankful that this happened while she was still here.
Right.
And, you know, I had told her that, you know, if it happened after she passed, then I would be carried the ball and the torch.
Right.
So
we're going to be following this case, and it's really early. He hasn't even been arraigned yet. We don't know what's going on. Either one of two things are going to happen. Either he's going to take this to trial, or he's going to just plead guilty and go away and rot in prison. Whatever happens, you and Debbie's family are going to have a chance to possibly confront him in court and make an impact statement. Are you prepared to do that? Are you wanting to do that?
I've been wanting to do that from the day I found out she was murdered. I've been wanting to do that. I absolutely want to turn to him and look him in his eyes and tell him exactly what he did and how I feel. Absolutely.
Yeah. You might get that chance now. How does that feel? Like, I mean, you're going to get a chance to finally confront him. And I could feel the pain and the weight of Debbie's death you've been carrying it with you for so many years. And are you going to be able to finally let that off your shoulders?
I'm going to try, but I do feel that if I turn to him and tell him what I want to say to him, you know, the primary thing coming out of my mouth is going to be, you know, you extinguished a very beautiful light and robbed so many people of a beautiful daughter, a family member, a friend, and how could she be so selfish, and how could she do something so horrendous? And, you know, of course, I have choice words that I know I won't say here, but, you know, knowing that I might have that opportunity to tell him what I think, it makes me feel empowered for Debbie, not for myself, but for her, because I know the type of woman that she was, and I know what she wanted and what her convictions and her morals and her standards were. And he is the exact opposite of everything that she ever wanted for her life, of any person that she ever knew. He has no moral turpitude whatsoever, and I want to explain that to him, and I want to be her voice that day when I speak to him.
I wonder how many... Do you have an idea of how many other sexual assaults have been connected to him thus far? Confirmed?
I'm only guessing between 10 and 15, but I don't know. I'm just going off of what I hear in the news. And 10 might be a stretch. I don't know.
Right.
But there's also the consideration of the women that have not reported. So, you know, how many could that be? How many?
Yeah. Which happens, you know, all too often, too, because of things like what happened in Unbelievable.
Yeah. You know,
the shame and the embarrassment, the fear of not being believed.
That's why I didn't report mine, because I had been conditioned to think that the police would never believe me, and that, you know, victim shaming and it still happens. And so they say, well, what were you wearing? You know, where were you? What were you drinking? You know, were you flirting? Well, Yeah, no, I wasn't. I was wearing sweats or I was wearing a dress, but does that give a man or anybody permission to sexually assault me? No. That doesn't give anybody the right to invade another person's body.
Yeah.
You know, and Debbie was in the privacy of her own home, and that doesn't give anybody the right to go in there and invade that privacy either.
Yeah. I wonder how and why that happened. She wouldn't have just let him in. She wouldn't have. She didn't know him.
No. So which blows my mind as to why there was no forced entry. I don't understand why she allowed him in. I'm assuming she allowed him in because she was the type of person when she walked in her home, even when she was living with her father, she would lock the gate that went to the front door. She would go to the front door, close it, lock it, deadbolt it, put the chain on. That's how she was. Every time.
Right.
So I don't understand. He's the only one. He and Debbie are actually the only two that know what really happened, and one is only here to tell the tale.
I doubt he's going to ever say it. I think this guy's a coward. He looks like a sniveling little coward to me. I don't think he'll ever own up to anything that he's done.
No, he won't. He'll never own up to it. You know, but I'm sorry, mister. DNA doesn't lie, and your DNA was your worst enemy today.
Yep, absolutely. I knew it. Yep. Like we said it back in the episode that the answers are there, that it's with his DNA. He left it. They just have to find it. They've got to find it. Somebody's going to find it. And they did. Thank God. And I remember thinking, wanting that so bad. I had, when I posted about Debbie's episode, I tagged some law enforcement agencies and the sheriffs in and around the Fresno area. And one of them got back to me and said, this isn't our case, but I will contact the person in charge of our case and we'll look into it. And I never got a follow-up to that. So hopefully, you know, I know that there was some officers that were dedicated to her case that really wanted it solved and stuck with it until this day came.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been a lot of people that have been in the background doing a lot of work. You know, it's heart-wrenching. It's heart-wrenching. My thoughts are not clear, I'm telling you. I'm thinking about all the people that were involved, all the people on the peripheral, all of the people that are instantly involved with Debbie, and there's just so many. And who do you thank for all this? And you're on the peripheral of all of this. And, you know, as I stated in the beginning, if it weren't for you, her voice would not be heard. My voice can only carry so far, only to my local group on Facebook, which is my friends and family. And there aren't that many. So there's only so many times that I can post, oh, I miss Debbie. There's only so many blogs that I can post on my Facebook page about how much I miss her. And people are going to be, you know, annoyed by the fact that I keep repeating the same thing over and over again. Well, you know, my feelings are viable, just like everybody else's when they lose somebody. And, you know, I was getting to the point where I was desperate to get her story out, and I had no idea who to turn to. And maybe it was your voice when I first heard California Dreaming, and I heard the very first episode that maybe you were compassionate enough to work with me, and that's why I approached you and asked to speak to you, not knowing that you were actually the be-all, end-all of California Dreaming.
Yeah, it's not that far-reaching, but, you know, we have our audience, and at the time, I did record a promo for Debbie's episode specifically, and about, I want to say about 30 other podcasts played it for me. So
I know when you told me that, I was very touched at how far reaching your promotion of Debbie's podcast had actually gone. I was very touched and very emotional over it, and you and I had private conversations on the phone about, you know, all of this. And I'm very indebted and grateful to you for being so compassionate and empathetic and sympathetic and warm about all of this. And, you know, hence the reason why you were one of the first two, you and Heather, that I wanted to tell about this.
Thank you. I couldn't imagine being any other way about it, especially now. You know, I consider you a friend, and I know we had made plans to try to meet up and it never happened. Lots of stuff has changed, but eventually we're not that far apart now. You know, Fresno is just a few hours north of here, and when things maybe settle down, we can finally get together.
I would love that.
Is Debbie's burial place near where you are now?
Yes. It is about, it's about 10 miles away from me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go there tomorrow and clean up her headstone and put some flowers and then go visit my mother. She's in the next cemetery over. So.
Will you take some pictures?
Yeah, I can take some pictures.
Wow. I'm so happy. This is such great news today.
It is. It's bittersweet. Like I said, I don't really know what to do with myself. I go back and forth between being super ecstatic and super sad because just bringing up all of those memories of when I first learned about losing her. And over the years, lots of little fears to manage with time, because that's what time teaches you, is how to manage loss. It doesn't help you to heal from it. And I've learned to manage the loss of Debbie in my life over the couple of decades that she has not been in my life. And now that this has all come to fruition, it's still fresh. And I'm sure tonight it's not going to be a pretty picture for me. So I'm going to avail myself and, you know, of doing the renovations, my energy from turning into anxiety.
Great. All right. I'm going to go. I'm going to put this up. I'm going to try to get it all put together and put up tonight. So
okay.
The listeners are really anxious to hear more details. When articles come up, send them my way or post them in the group. We're going to keep following this story until this guy is put away forever.
I really appreciate that. I think Debbie would be honored to know that there are a group of people that are rooting for her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Met. And for you, too.
I appreciate that.
Sure.
I really do. I appreciate that a lot. And, you know,
when you have a chance to settle down and come into the Facebook group, there's people anxious to send their well wishes to you. So.
Well,
when you feel up to it.
I'll say this to them right now. It's going to be a while until I go in there. At least that's my plan for now. I kind of want to stay a little dark on Facebook for a phase. But to all the California Dreaming people, over the last year, your support and your love for myself as well as Debbie and the family really mean a lot. And I want to thank every single one of you for being as supportive as you have been, and for some of you who have been gung-ho, let's go get the bastard, thank you very much, and I love you for that, and you guys mean a lot, and I'm very honored to be a part of this close family. I'm really honored.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing her story with us. That was one of the best parts about this, was that one of the few stories that I've been able to, it's one of the few stories where I've been able to talk to somebody actually connected to a victim. And
I'm glad I was able to talk to all of this.
And it takes it to a different place for all of us emotionally, you know?
Yeah, it makes it personal.
Yeah.
You know, not just based on a news report with nobody connected to it. You know, you put the emotion into it, and you hear a voice of somebody that was actually connected and what they're going through because of it. It makes it more personal. And you know, I want people to know when they walk away from the story that it was beautiful light, and he was a beautiful person, and very intelligent, and very loved.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.